This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. Start your own blog or website in minutes for the very low price of just $6.95 per month. Bluehost makes it really easy. One-click installation of your blog, you get your own .com domain name included in the price, and you never have to worry about bandwidth or storage space. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. I don't know what time it is, but it is time to talk about The Hobbit. And joining me today to do that is my co-host Inge from Groningen, the Netherlands. And that's also where I live. I'm Father Roderick, and we both live in the Netherlands. Our other co-host, Dave Kael, unfortunately wasn't available. But Inge, you have done very extensive preparations, and I think we've gotten enough for at least 4 hours of podcasting, don't you think?
Yeah, at least.
It's going to be.
So my question is, where to begin?
Problematic. Well, we begin at the beginning. Let's start with the breaking news, and then we'll just work our way through our list and see how far we get.
You're done.
Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't turn me in anything unnatural.
So breaking news today, The Hobbit is complete, at least according to the OneRing.net. This was posted this morning. Post-production people were working very, very hard over the on the last parts of The Hobbit. And if you've seen the latest production video that was out on Peter Jackson's Facebook page, you might have heard them say that probably they would be working till, let's say, 2 days before the premiere. Well, apparently, the post-production people have been tweeting over the last few hours that film one is finally done and dusted. According to senior online editor Rob Gordon, he says, "Get ready. HFR is coming your way. Are you ready?" What would that mean, HFR?
High frame rate?
Oh, that must
instead
be
instead of the normal 24 frames. What is it? Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what that means, but it definitely means that post-production is wrapped up. It still could mean that they're doing some last minute tweaking on the sound or whatever. But it is encouraging news to see that the people that are working on this first movie are now openly tweeting that the end is near, at least when it comes to their work. And that is always a relief because, it must be one of the most stressful jobs in the world to work around the clock to get that movie done and finished and wrapped up before the premiere. You don't want to sit in the theater there with Peter Jackson and all the, you know, the entire cast and then have like 10 minutes of footage missing or something like that. So that's very exciting. And it just shows how much these people are in control. Even though, speaking of this new production video, number 9, it seemed to me that despite the fact that they must be working, you know, day and night, they still have some time for fun because it was a very fun video.
Yeah, lots of time for fun.
Wasn't it amazing?
Yeah, I had to laugh out loud at several points in the video. Very, very lighthearted. Yeah.
It's something that struck me from the beginning in these first production videos. It always seemed to have this, you know, despite the fact that they're really doing a great job showing how complicated a movie production of this scale is, that every production video had a lot of fun. And it genuinely seemed to me that everybody who is involved in this production is also enjoying it very much. And even Peter Jackson, in his introduction, when he's sitting there in that theater and he's screening the movie and he's in the editing process, he seemed to me a lot more relaxed and more rested. Wouldn't you think so, Inge?
Yeah, he also seems to have lost weight. Yes. He compared it to earlier production videos.
Definitely.
He was more like a hobbit, but now he's more like himself again.
I guess it's also because when you're editing, of course, that's a lot of work. But the bulk of the running around and flying around in helicopters and keeping track not only of your own shooting schedule, but also what second production is doing, that must be much more physically exhausting than the editing process, where he says it in this production video, it's basically him and the editor, the last man standing. And so you do a lot of that stuff kind of intellectually, but you don't have to run around that much. And so my guess is that he lives a much more regular, you know, more kind of calm life.
Well. I can imagine that you use office hours for this.
Probably extended office hours.
Or extended office hours, but there's some kind of regularity in your life.
Yeah.
And you don't and that, have does, to... that also benefits everything else. If exactly. you have no structure in life,
yeah.
then I noticed that for myself too. Also, when I lose that, then on all the different sectors of my life, things go not as planned as well.
And of course, Peter Jackson is prepping for the premiere and he has to fit in that tuxedo. So that might also be a reason. Although I guess that he might have some spare change to get himself a new tuxedo if needed. But it was good to see him kind of relaxed and in control. And it was so much fun to see. Let's play the beginning of this production video, because it, right from the get-go, my jaw was dropping on the floor by what I saw. Let's see. Playing this straight from Facebook.
Welcome to the theatre at Park Road Post. This is our post-production facility in Wellington, and this is where we're spending a huge amount of time at the moment, just working on getting The Hobbit finished. It's due to be completed literally 2 days before the premiere, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So we'll give you...
So we see right from the start the various buildings in which they are working on The Hobbit. And what struck me immediately was how big Weta has become. And they show you the old building where the entire trilogy, which was already such a huge production, where that was being edited and prepped for launch. And now they've got, what did they say, like 7 or 8 buildings?
Eight buildings,
so many people working on the special effects, but even even just visualizing things, stuff that normally you would do even before you start filming, but they are still creating artwork for, you know, these green screen scenes. And there were some very interesting moments where you see an action scene and there is a green background, and then they immediately overlay the artwork that is being created right there in post-production, and it looks amazing. It's just so cool to see all that.
Yeah, and it was on the news site, there was a question, what's that bird? Is that a Trusk? You know, the Trusks that tell...
One of the birds that also, that are kind of used by, was it Saruman who uses them for
no, those
for information?
Were Kraven. So those Krays, how do you say that? Kraven. So this kind of black bird.
Okay.
But these are Trusks, and the Trusks are very important in the story because they tell the dwarves about Dor.
Mm-hmm.
And they also some humans have this this ability to understand the language of them.
Mm-hmm.
So Bart the Bowman gets news from a Trusk about Smaug. So he knows.
Right. So it's interesting to see Radagast like this at the beginning, again, it seems to suggest that there are going to be a lot of extended scenes and new material that is probably faithful to the overall story, but it's nevertheless, it's going to be a surprise even for the diehard Tolkien fans.
Yeah, it for some fans, this is a kind of a reassurement.
Reassurance,
because, the name of Radagast in Quenya, which escapes me,
mm-hmm.
it means lover of birds.
Mm-hmm. Or, yes.
So just basically... shows that that's the where they go. So he's talking to birds, like mm-hmm. you would expect.
Well, doesn't he have like a bird's nest under his hat or something?
Yeah, something like that.
I didn't really see it. Let me check that again.
Show me.
Well, he's got a big hat, but yeah, oh, and there's some there's bird poop on his right side of his face. He must have had a lot of birds sitting there. It looks amazing, though. Absolutely amazing. I even have to say, I have to admit, even the bunny sled looks better in this scene. It looks more convincing. We get to see a little bit more of that scene. Although I still wonder how that thing can actually slide. Because,
over trees that are... Yeah.
There must be some magic involved. After all, you know, he's Radagast.
There's no such things as magic of that kind.
But, you know, he might have some, like, special deals with the forest to help him, I don't know, lift that thing up. It didn't struck me as being too, you know, out there. Very, very cool little tidbit there right at the beginning. And then, of course, they show you just all the different departments. There's also a lot of... like goofery in this production video, especially the bit with the beards. At first, like digital beards. Yeah, right. And then they show you that whole department focusing on the motion capture of the individual strands of hair in the beards.
beard animation.
So, of course, that is totally, you know, it's a fake department, but it was so much fun to see that they created that little video. Same thing as the moment where they release the animators and they're all sleeping there in one small room. And I guess later on at the end of the video, we see that they are probably kind of celebrating some landmark, or they have a big party. And I think that one shot where they'll wake up, they still wear the goofy suits and everything. So that must have been the morning after the party or something. But the other thing that struck me was how well edited these production videos are. I mean, I think these are going straight to DVD and to Blu-ray. This is material not just for the blog.
They don't do that for fun because it costs blurring out and animating stuff in the movie. It costs money, so you want to have some. To make some money on it, so.
Absolutely, and I think this even the quality. I mean, it's all shot in HD. This is not some, you know, amateur whatever freelancer that they hire to do this. This is part of the entire production, and even the narration by Peter Jackson. And I mean, it's all professionally done. You can tell that he's very well prepared, and they thought this out, and that's a joy to watch. I mean, very few movies give us this kind of stuff. Normally, with the production videos or even like a preparatory PR videos, it's usually these interviews with actors, and then, I so loved working with this director, and he's so amazing. And, you know, it's the bland, totally uninteresting stuff. Whereas I feel that Peter Jackson and his crew take us, the fans, seriously, and they show us even the, you know, the nuts and bolts of a production like this. And it really, I've watched the Blu-rays of the Lord of the Rings trilogy over and over again. I've listened to all the audio commentaries, and still this production video gave me new stuff, and I just didn't realize how much was involved.
And they gave us new glimpses of new scenes.
Oh yeah, also let's talk about all
lots
the
of nuggets
stuff in the background. Now, a lot of it is blurred out because apparently at least part of the crew is already working on the second movie.
Yeah.
And so they're just going nonstop. And I guess that's why a lot of the photos on the wall were blurred out. But I also noticed that they blurred out some posters, movie posters from other franchises that they probably don't have the rights to. I very quickly saw some posters, some James Bond posters. Now, that, of course, is not in their catalog. And there was a Tintin poster in one of the rooms that they blurred out. So it could also be kind of like protecting themselves from lawsuits, but definitely they try to hide anything that's in the second movie.
Yeah, that was one of the first things that struck me. That's much blur in this movie, in this particular video, because in the previous video, they occasionally would blur out something like conceptual art or something like that.
Yeah.
But here there was just lots of stuff.
It also kind of means that whatever we see in this video will be in the first movie, which is very interesting. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about Dale. That was your big theory, how they would be able to kind of integrate the story of Dale in the first movie in a way that was beyond anything that Tolkien himself wrote about Dil. I mean, we know what happens to Dil, but we weren't sure how that story of that city would be told in the movies.
Yeah, well, it gets told a little bit by at one point, and I don't know where in the story it is because it has been a while since I have read the book. But at one point, the dwarves explain to Bilbo how they got chased away from Erebor, and some of the dwarves lived as younger dwarves. They lived there, so they were witnesses and first hand accounts they have for what happened. And so, and I can imagine that that will be expanded. So that part right, where I think one of the older dwarves is just telling the story.
It's going to be one of those flashbacks, probably.
Yeah, and what they say is, well, like they talk about how nice it was to live at Erebor, the Lonely Mountain, and they also talk about Dale. And then they talk about how Dale was destroyed. So, and at one point here in this production video, they need to make sounds, record sounds. And one of the Foley
department.
One of the sounds they need to make is people in panic in Dale. So they are running around in panic.
And they even confirm that those sounds are being recorded for the moment where Smaug brings devastation to Dale.
They
say that explicitly. So that means probably that we'll get to see that in the first movie already, which kind of makes sense. But I just wonder if they're going to do it as a flashback or if it's going to be part of the prologue, because we know that there's going to be one. What do you think? Is this going to be in the very beginning of the movie, or are we going
to see this? No, I don't think it will be the prologue. I think the prologue will just cover the Battle of Azanul Bazar, because you need to explain to the audience why dwarves and orcs and goblins are such enemies.
Yes.
And so in the battle, and of course there's always this other narrative that wherever dwarves go, they are chased away by dwarves. So dwarves and dragons have a kind of a weird history as well. But that's kind of a separate story. So I can see how they would separate that, because the whole premise of the movie is the dwarves have been tossed out of Erebor, and they want to get it back. So you first need to set a kind of history of the dwarves.
Yes. I have a theory about when we will see this destruction of Dale. And I think one of the ways in which they could do this, rather than taking a moment where, for instance, I don't know, they're just sitting, resting and eating, and then one of the dwarves tells the story to Bilbo, one of the other ways in which they can do this is as an illustration of the song that the dwarves sing, the one that we know from the first trailer. This is also the first moment in the Hobbit book where Tolkien talks about Dale. You know, the song, Far Over the Misty Mountains Cold, to Dungeons Deep and Caverns Old. In that song, at one point, it says, "The bells were ringing in the dale, and man looked up with faces pale. The dragon's ire, more fierce than fire, laid low their towers and houses frail." So, one of the things that kind of bugged me for a while now is how much time we seem to be spending in Hobbiton. It's something that I first hoped they would do, because I felt that in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, we don't see enough of Hobbiton. We don't see enough of the Hobbit world that we leave behind. It's such a nice place, and yet it's so we're there for such a brief time. And so I was hoping to see more of Bag End and everything. But then I don't know if you've seen this patched together long 7-minute trailer that was done by one of the fans. Well, anyway, there's this fan who took all the trailer material, also the stuff from the TV spots, and put it in a chronological order, which results in an amazing 7 minutes of footage. And then he used a lot of the music from the Lord of the Rings trilogy to kind of patch it together audio-wise. And it's a pretty good job. It's not perfect, but you do get a much better idea of how this movie will kind of pace itself. And I was just amazed to see how much is taking place in Hobbiton, and more specifically in Bag End. And I was even getting a little bit tired of seeing these dwarves eating and laughing and throwing things at each other. It's like, that's going to be, because it's a very cramped space. And so yeah. I was like, I don't want to be inside that Bag End house for half an hour. How are they going to open this up? I just felt that visually, in order for this first part of the movie to breathe, you need to kind of like break out of that house. And in a book, it's not such a problem because visually, you kind of focus on the stories that are told. But if you see it visually, it kind of gets old. And so that's why I'm thinking that during that song, I wouldn't be surprised if that's going to be one of the big flashbacks where they will be singing and then that song will bring us to the places where they sing about it. And so Dale, and it not necessarily, in a way that we just hear that song and then you get some images kind of laid over that as an illustration exactly of the song. But I can imagine that song begins and then we get to this part about Dale and then, we open up a flashback and the song kind of stops and we see that story of Dale. And then we'll go back to Bag End, and we'll the song will pick up again. I think that would be a very elegant way to tell this story.
Yeah, because if it was only kind of imagery for the song, then the screaming people would make sense. Because if you use the images of Dale being destroyed and just have the song and playing underneath it, you don't have to record those Foley sounds.
Well, you could hear that in the background. I mean, there is a way to do this very briefly, but I think that since they built this entire set and they spent so much time on it, I can imagine that we'll see it for a more extensive type of flashback.
Yeah. Or Dale could be part of multiple flashbacks.
Yes, it could also be part of the prologue. In a way that they tell, if you tell the story of Erebor, of the mountain, you got to tell the story of Dale as well. I mean, that's not going to be much of a stretch because you're going to talk about Smaug and about his destruction.
And of course, it's also if you cannot say a show of a village or a city and without any context and then expect people to recognize this as being Dale.
Yeah.
So first you have to explicitly say, well, this is Dale. Mm-hmm. And then people know how Dale looks like. And then if you use it in later flashbacks, you don't have to explain again that this is Dale because people have seen it before.
Right. Anyway, I think the song might be, I mean, that might be the reason that we see it in the first trailer, because this song is going to be an important storytelling element of the first movie, which we'll see if it's going to work out like this, but I would certainly like it. Let's talk about Smaug. Some people think that they've spotted him, and this is really a glimpse. It's at 2:37 for those listeners that might want to check that out for themselves. It's a very brief glimpse. There's this guy, I forgot who it was. Is he the guy from the sound or from the Foley? Anyway, we get to be shown around, and then on the left side, very briefly, just for 1 second, you see someone working on a computer screen, and there seems to be this red form, this red shape. Who knows? And it looks like it's happening inside some kind of a cave or something. Now, we don't know anything about this. This is not even, we don't even know if Smaug is going to be red. Would make sense, but and
Smaug the golden, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and then but I think that people associate red with dragons. It could also just be an element that they just color red for the time being. I mean, in these pre-visualizations, they do that all the time just to make to focus on that particular animation or to set it apart from the background. So I don't know if that's Smaug. And even if it is, it doesn't tell us anything. So I think that's why it's not blurred out. But I still like the speculation about it. And there's more speculation about certain people that we see.
I'm now looking at the still of that.
Mm-hmm.
2:37.
Yeah.
And it looks a little bit like, indeed, like a cave with something like gold on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And a kind of a white mount, so that's would be where Martin Freeman would be imaged.
Who knows?
And there's a big head with red and teeth in okay. it.
Well, that yeah, that's what I thought.
A mock-up of Smaug. Yeah.
But I was also thinking perhaps we're just seeing things because we want to see Smaug. That's why we think it is Smaug, and we say, oh, those are teeth, and perhaps it's something totally different. But anyway, the video contains a lot of these glimpses where you're like, wait, what? What did I just see? Let's go back. And at 9 minutes and 38 seconds, there is a very intriguing moment. This is part of the sound mixing part. But we see a glimpse of a dwarf. And I was like, who is that? And it is a scene, strangely enough, with Thorin in it. And Thorin has completely different clothes from what he's wearing in the other scenes that we've seen with him. Actually, he's got his very bright blue suit. Now, yeah. Of course, this is all going to be muted down afterwards when they're grading the movie. It was, by the way, very, very cool to see how they do that, how they change the colors of the movie, and they're just photoshopping on moving images. And it was so amazing to see how that very bland-looking footage from Hobbiton in Matamata, how they just color that in and it becomes this beautiful painting almost. Anyway, that's nor here and there. But we see, what I think might be Thrain the Second with a younger Thorin. It has to be him. So is this going to be part of the prologue? Is this?
I think that this is what we are looking at is part of the Battle of Azanulbizar, that they are kind of on a fortification and they are fighting orcs. Because if you go back all the way to the beginning, and then you see the bird, and you see Radagast,
yes,
and you see Peter Jackson telling, and when they fade out and they talk about it, there's one second you see all kinds of dwarves in one image with all kinds of goblins all in the same image.
Oh really?
So that can be, or it can be the goblin town, but it can also be by the way they are behaving. That it's a kind of battle. And it's kind of outdoors, so it must be, in my book, Azanulbizar. So they focus a lot on the trolls, and then they go back to the goblin tunnels. But you see parts of for example, Thorin has very black hair.
Okay, so it could be a younger version of him.
Yes.
And that makes sense because we know that the actor said that he would play a younger version of himself, and even he had trained in a different fighting style. He was more brash, and when he's older, he's much more composed.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I also looked up the actor who plays Thrain, mm-hmm. and I think it's him because it kind of matches his face. Because it's hard to say. With they wear
prosthetics and a lot of makeup and wigs, and so yeah, you never know. But it's and there was also this set which looked fabulous. This is at 51 seconds in, and it's this green palace, and it's clearly part of a set, and they're going to do set extension. So with CGI, they will probably fill that in. But I've never seen it before. The only thing that comes close to what we've seen in previous production videos is that one mysterious scene where there was a table that looked like an altar, and remember that? And that too was all kind of green marble, and this palace also seems to have green marble. So could this be?
Yeah, it could be Moria. So the Moria a time ago, but in the books that's black marble.
I think this is definitely dwarven architecture.
Yeah, but my other bet would be how do you call it? Dain Ironfoot's palace.
That's what
At
I
one
think.
Point, yeah. they go and they look for reinforcements, and Dain mm-hmm. Ironfoot comes with his army.
Yes.
So that could also be that it's that.
I'm pretty convinced that that must be the case. Although I have to say, the palace itself looks pretty damaged, and there are some clear marks of an attack. And it's not just because this is going to be a set, you know, there's going to be a set extension in CGI. You can tell that there's been a big battle going on there. So perhaps the battle got very close to his palace, and that's when he decided to join or whatever.
It still can be several things because If you want to tell the story of the dwarves, you also need to tell about Moria, about Durin, and about the Balrog.
True.
And that they got also, that's also another place they got chased away mm-hmm. from. Mm-hmm. And about the attempt to reconquer it from the orcs and goblins who live there now.
Yeah, it could be interesting if they would show that. That could be part of the prologue to set it up, because then that part of the story would also not just prepare us for the Hobbit movies, but it would also already give us a little bit of background for what we see in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because they go through Moria. And so it would give that a little bit more context, because we don't get to see that in a prologue for the Lord of the
Battle,
Rings.
Yeah, and of course, the Battle of Azanulbizard, which is in Westron, so in English, mm-hmm. it's the Battle of the Dimrill Dale. And the Dimrill Dale is the area you are in when you have the front door entrance of Moria and Lorien, the area in between that. And that used to be very forested, but mm-hmm. because of this battle and a huge number of casualties, they had to burn all the victims, mm-hmm. and they deforested that whole dale, and that's why there are no trees anymore.
Well, it's definitely something that we will see in the first movie, because otherwise they would have blurred it out or they would have skipped this entirely. But it looks like a huge set. Mm-hmm. This is inside, so it's going to be a green screen set, and on the left there's even more of the set that we see, and there seems to be almost like a fire thing or whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's fascinating. There are also little glimpses of scenes with the dwarves with a green screen background when they're editing, mm-hmm. and you can free frame that. I don't think that is very, important stuff. It could just be part of one of the many food fights that they recorded. Were there any other interesting details in this production video, Inge?
Yeah, what I see is that Dave told us that mm-hmm. If they would expand the movie, that they would expand pretty much on the Goblin Town.
Yes.
And if you see the footage of this production video, you see it's big, and at one point there's this kind of tutorial of 1 minute that they need torture devices, and then they get a description that goblins are slowly pushing the torture devices to the great goblins mm-hmm. platform. So basically that means that there's lots of extended material connected to that part of the book. So that basically confirms what Dave is saying about that.
Yes, indeed. And now that I think of this, the green set that we just talked about, there's another option, and that is that it is part of Erebor. Because, of course, that mountain contains also dwarven architecture. And so the damage that we see on that set could have been caused by Smaug.
Yeah, well, at one point, Smaug is being killed. He flies away to Dale because he wants to find the burglar. And at one point when he is killed, then the people of Dale are like, okay, the dragon is dead. Mm-hmm. What do dragons do? They sit on a pile of gold. Let's mm-hmm. go to Erebor, get the gold.
Yeah.
And then the dwarves already kind of figured out that would happen. They have a fortress there, and uh-huh. they reinforce that. And then there's this back and forth going on between the people of Dale and the dwarves. Right. And then that's where Bilbo slips the Arkenstone to, I think, Bart the Bowman.
Yeah.
And better bartering.
Well, then it would make sense that they would build such a big set, a real set, and not just use CGI or background painting. If this was if this architecture is going to come back at several moments, and it could be when we first see Smaug and how he takes possession of the mountain.
Yeah.
And then later on, this is also going to be used in like the third movie, I assume. Then
yeah, but it would
be worth the investment.
You wouldn't see it as extended in the first movie, because they said it ends in with escaping mm-hmm. with the eagles flying them to the Carrack. Taken mm-hmm. care of, the rescue by the eagles. Mm-hmm. So that's way before this whole Erebor thing. So that would mean that whole fortress wouldn't be part of the first movie. Mm-hmm. Or hardly part of the first movie.
Yeah. So. We get to see a lot of the trolls. And yes. Even more talking. More of the we hear the middle troll. We only heard one. And now the middle one has a very squeaky voice. I don't know exactly where that was. Let me try to find that passage. But what did you think of that whole troll scene? It seems to be a very long scene.
Yeah, that's another place where they expanded and made lots of people jump through. So in the book, mm-hmm. First Bilbo gets captured because he needs to investigate. Yes. And then he investigates, and because he's a hobbit, he can be kind of invisible. But then he realizes, well, I'm a burglar. I'm supposed to burgle something. And then he tries to burgle a key.
Uh-huh.
Or something from the pocket of the troll, and then he gets caught. And then it takes a while, and then the dwarves come one by one. And then they get tied up in sacks, and then the trolls start to discuss
yes.
how they
will cook it.
Yeah, so it doesn't justify a huge battle with one hobbit and all the dwarves jumping around, because that's not what happens.
No, they definitely changed the scene, and let me play the part where the motion capture. I'm not sure if that's also where we hear the trolls. But I think so, because this is also where they talk about, you know, doing voices for the trolls for the first time. Let's listen in here for a second, if I can make...
The original production office for Lord of the Rings, but now it's the home of all the animators for Hobbit.
So the troll sequence, definitely one of the biggest animation challenges. They're speaking, which is something new for trolls.
You hear that in the background? That was the middle troll.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a troll.
No, but funny. I mean, it's cool that they will give these trolls very different characters and voices.
New for trolls.
Are there any more of you little fellas hiding where you shouldn't?
In Rings, they're always only ever kind of grunting. Peter shot at live action on the mocap stage.
Are there any more of you little fellas hiding where you shouldn't?
Pete liked the action, but wanted to go a little bit bigger on what the stunt guys were doing.
So maybe we do a custom mocap shoot for just those bits.
That felt good. I'm happy with that. Okay, should we move on?
We've advanced the...
So they definitely have expanded that scene and made it a lot more dramatic than what Tolkien was writing, and I like it. The way it looks, the trolls look fantastic. Now that the grading is much more in an advanced stage, you know, color-wise, mood-wise, this movie looks totally awesome. Let's see. We have a lot of other things on our list to talk about as well. I'm trying to think of other things that we've seen in this first... in this production video. What I really liked, and I've said this before, is the whole color grading part. This is around, let's say, the 8-minute mark, and especially the way that they kind of used the footage from Matamata and just made it look so beautiful. It is very beautiful. I mean, I've been there a couple of years ago, and it was on a sunny day. The skies were blue, and it was like, no wonder that they picked this place. But then when they were filming there with... you know, the scenes with both old Bilbo and Frodo and then whatever they filmed, what else they filmed out there. It was kind of overcast. And I think that we also saw some glimpses of when Bilbo returns. So this is going to be in the third movie. And I was a bit disappointed. It's like, wow, they really chose a bad day to film this. And it doesn't look as beautiful as I remembered it. And what I hoped that they would have weather-wise. But now that I see what they can do with color grading, I was like, who cares? Yeah. Could have been snowing that day, and it would still look amazing.
Yeah, I remember from pictures that they used big floodlights just to give the impression of sunshine.
Yeah, but then even, you know, with I think they can just create sunshine even if the sun wasn't shining.
Yeah.
And it's really, really cool. And I like what I've seen so far of The Hobbit. I like it a lot more than what they did for The Lord of the Rings. And it's, you know, it's that became clear to me when I rewatched the trilogy on Blu-ray. And it just is so much more obvious that this movie is dated now. It's especially when it comes to special effects. A lot of the the colors are muted, but there is also a lot of kind of CGI effects or green screen stuff where it's just not up to today's standards. But when everything I've seen so far from The Hobbit looks vastly superior to what I saw in
The Lord
of the Rings.
That makes me wonder, because this movie plays before The Lord of the Rings. So if you would watch The Hobbit first and then The Lord of the Rings, you would obviously notice this. Would that do something like Lucasfilm does?
No.
Just redo the CGI and everything for a new release?
No, I don't think they really need it, because yes, the special effects are in a different place. But then again, the thing I think what made The Lord of the Rings such an amazing production is that a lot of the stuff that you see is not CGI. It's just, you know, like all the weapons and the clothes and there was so much was constructed for this movie and are just genuine physical effects. So I don't think it's much of a problem, especially because there's a great continuity in costuming and makeup, and all the characters that we know from the existing trilogy just look slightly better. Even Gollum in the trailer, the second trailer, I mean, it's obvious that he looks so much more realistic than anything we saw in the trilogy. And at the time, the trilogy was groundbreaking, and no one had seen such an amazing, you know, lifelike CGI puppet, basically, or character. But in the second trailer for The Hobbit, I was like, Gollum is there. It doesn't even cross my mind that this is a CGI character. But since that movie at the time, you know, it worked fine. I think it's only when we're going to see the new trilogy, the Hobbit trilogy, and then we'll go see the Lord of the Rings. Yeah, we might be a little bit like, that doesn't look as good as in The Hobbit. But I think for now it doesn't really matter, because people have forgotten about the trilogy. And for a lot of them, you know, it's been a while since they visited Middle Earth. So, I'm so excited about this movie. Well, let's move over to the rest of our news, because otherwise, we're never going to get to the end of the show.
Hold on.
There and back again.
Jingle.
A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. An age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
So the trailer, the production video 9, it is probably going to be the last one, because it says at the end, it's like, see you at the premiere. But it showed us also a lot of the music being recorded in London. And in our show notes for today, you posted a few things about the music specifically. What's that thing about the Radagast of Brown and the music?
Well, there are the soundtrack will be released on December 11th.
Yes.
But apparently someone leaked the complete soundtrack, and it's available via all kinds of illegal ways. So if you go out of your way and you can already listen to it.
I don't like that. It's like unwrapping your Christmas presents right now, you know?
That's also why I haven't listened to it, and I also didn't make any effort to find out where you can download it, because I don't want to hear it.
No, me neither. I don't care.
There was this. There are those videos on YouTube, and they are not being removed. So I kind of assume that the studio is okay with them being online.
Yeah,
because otherwise they would have been removed.
Well, the way they monetize this is that if you go to one of those videos, it has a link where you can buy the music or you can pre-order it. So
yeah, and I listened to the soundtrack, Old Friends.
Okay.
And it says, well, you can buy Radagast of Brown, so that's basically a Radagast of Brown soundtrack, and the idea is to give him. Give an impression of the character of Radagast of Brown by use of music.
Okay.
And it's very, very interesting, because it's kind of chaotic, and which is kind of his character. But it's also very It feels very Eastern European to me.
Oh, really?
Slavic with a choice of music. So that's.
I've got a YouTube video here that says Radagast the Brown. Let me just play a few seconds of that. Is it this one?
Yes.
So that's choir stuff. Let's see a little bit further. Hmm. Sounds intriguing.
Yeah, at the least. Because...
Wow. I don't know what that was. Anyway, it's a pretty good quality as well. So I guess people can just check that out on YouTube if they want to listen to it.
So if you search for the Hobbit official soundtrack, you'll get a number of videos with all kinds of different.
Well, and you know, it's not really much of a problem because a lot of people are going to purchase this and listen to this music way before the premiere. So you know, this comes out, what is it, like almost a week and a half before the first premiere.
Yeah, I don't know when the movie premieres in the United States, but it premieres here the 12th or the 14th.
December. I think in the US it's like a day later than, or 2 days later than over here in Holland. So we get to see it earlier, which is very cool. But then, of
for
course,
a change.
The big premiere in New Zealand is much earlier.
Yeah.
But then everybody's going to wait. But once the movie is out, the internet is going to be so much abuzz with all the excitement and probably also spoilers. So that's going to be a difficult time, even for a podcast like we're doing. You know, are we going to read all that stuff in the first reviews, or do we want to be surprised ourselves? I don't know. I haven't made a decision yet.
Yeah, talking about the soundtrack, mm-hmm. Did you listen to that ballad from Ben Newfin?
Yeah. So this was posted on, I've got the website here.
Rolling Stone.com.
There's an interview with this artist, and then it has actually, and this is legal. I mean, they posted it on as part of that article. You can hear Neil Finn's Song of the Lonely Mountain. Now, this is going to be played during the credits, and we've had a lot of these credit roll kind of more pop songs. And so, well, before we give our opinion, let's just play a little bit of this song and see what people think. I suppose this is it.
Far over the misty mountains rise, leave us standing upon the height.
Heavy synthesizers.
What was before, we see once more, is our kingdom a distant light. Fiery mountain.
You know what this reminds me of? Of the early. Let me turn the volume down a little bit. This reminds me of the, let's say, the 80s, early 80s music of Clannad and, you know, these Irish bands that were using a lot of synthesizers, kind of new agey. But this sounds...
It's also the same style as the Misty Mountain song sang by the dwarves. It's the same rhythm.
Yeah, but listen to this. It gets a bit of world music type of orchestration here. But I have to be honest, I don't like it.
So my opinion is, I have to say, back when I was a teenager...
Uh-huh.
I was a huge fan of Crowded House, and Neil Finn was lead singer of Crowded House.
Oh, so was he now?
I know his work very well.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, I am a big fan of Crowded House. I still like their music. It's kind of dated, but it was better than the Euro Dance they would play on the radio.
Right.
I don't like it either because it is kind of the same style of singing as the dwarves do, but the dwarves have these deep voices.
Yeah, and it kind of makes it sound cool with a deep voice.
Doesn't have a deep voice.
No.
So it doesn't sound right when he sings it.
And I don't like the synthesizers. I mean, like, come on. That's so dated. Even in modern pop music, you don't hear this kind of stuff anymore. It sounds like something from the 80s.
And the ay-ay-ay, that sounds a little bit tribal, and that has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings.
I know.
So that's kind of,
I don't want to talk too much about it because perhaps it's just I just got to get used to this stuff. But I was so liking these pop songs that we had in the original Lord of the Rings trilogy. I think all of them are pretty good. Even the Enya one, which is the one I like least. But compared to this one,
it has the right mood.
Yeah.
And because she sings something in Elvish, it fits because yeah. her voice has something Elvish as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this case, Niels sings something about dwarves, and he doesn't sound like a dwarf. And yeah. I think that causes a problem. But perhaps. Kudos for trying.
Oh, well, yeah. Not everything can be perfect about this movie. Hey, I want to play one of the new TV spots. And really, PR is wrapping up. Even I was going to the movies yesterday evening. And in my local movie theater, they had huge displays with The Hobbit announcing it. We're going to see a lot of these television commercials as well. This one is from Japan, and I want to play it because there are a few extra new scenes in it, but yeah. I also want to play it just because we hear some cool Japanese voiceovers.
I have no idea what they are talking about.
I'm looking for someone to
share in an adventure. Far over the misty.
Now, this is not Japanese, of course.
No. It's cool, though. To
dungeons deep, 世界の冒険は,
and caverns
old.
So, this is the Hobbit. I cannot guarantee his safety.
Understood. Lord of the Rings 3部作の 監督最新作.
Home is now behind you. The world is ahead.
ホビット、思いがけない冒険。
Hobbito.
Hobbito.
So that's it. Hobbito. Very cool.
That was my favorite part of the trailer.
Yeah, me too. And I think that whole precious thing, I wonder if that's really from The Hobbit or if it's a sound clip that they took from the existing trilogy.
It sounded much like the existing trilogy,
yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
It's very cool. And there are some glimpses of new stuff. There is one scene where they're on this ledge, and I think it's part of that whole situation with the mountain giants, or what is it, the rock giants?
Stone giants. Yeah.
And they're apparently it's so dangerous that some of the dwarves even are, you know, falling off, and they're just barely rescued by their fellow dwarves. It's really nice to see those glimpses. There are two other new trailers as well.
They're very short.
Yeah, very short. This is spot number 7. Let's take a look at that one. See if there's anything new in it.
The task I have in mind will require a great deal of stealth and no small amount of courage.
On December 14th, the first adventure.
More bunny sleds.
Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah.
Of the epic legend begins.
You'll have a tale or two to tell when you come back.
The Hobbit, an unexpected journey.
I don't like green food.
Where's the meat?
This film is not yet rated in Real D 3D and IMAX 3D December 14th.
I love that one.
Yeah.
The dwarves are certainly not vegetarians. Where's the meat?
Rabbit food.
I think this is, if you're a vegetarian, you might not like the dwarves that much. Let's see. There's another one, I think number 6, which looks pretty cool as well. At least a still image on that one. This is I'm playing this from Facebook, but looks amazing.
Why did you come?
I know you doubt me. I know you always have. I often think of Bag End. That's where I belong. That's home. You don't have one. It was taken from you. But I will help you take it back if I can.
We don't watch fighting.
The Hobbit, an unexpected journey. This film is not yet rated. In Real D 3D and IMAX 3D December 14th.
What I like about this one is that it shows us a little bit more the motivation of Bilbo, which to me sounds kind of new and like a good spin on the original story, where Bilbo kind of discovers that he has something in common with the dwarves. They don't really like him. They don't accept him. They might not understand why he's part of the journey. But Bilbo understands more than any dwarf in that company how important, or, well, I shouldn't say that, but he understands the value of having a home. I mean, he is so attached to his home, and now that he's away from it, he starts to feel what it must feel to the dwarves of having lost their home. And so this journey, this unexpected journey, is something that they have in common, because the dwarves were kind of chased away from their home, and so was Bilbo. Well, he wasn't really chased, but he feels how he misses home, and that is why he can relate to the dwarves. And so that's kind of where they find each other. I really like that spin. And again, I'm not sure if this is as obvious in the book as it is made here in this little TV spot, but I like it. It makes Bilbo's character and involvement credible.
It explains the CD track as well, why it was at that place.
Oh?
Because if you see where he's standing, that's in a circle when he pops up with his ring.
Oh, that might be it. Okay, interesting. Anyway, it's really cool, all the stuff that's popping up, and I'm getting more and more confident about this first movie. I think it is going to amaze everyone, because despite the fact that we've been following the production for more than a year now, I'm still, every time I see glimpses of the movie, I'm surprised and I'm wowed. And I think I will be amazed when I go see the movie, because I think there's a lot that we haven't seen yet, especially kind of the overall balance of the movie and how this story is told. And I don't get the feeling that they're kind of stringing it out and just, you know, adding all sorts of unnecessary stuff. I feel that they've really thought this through, this three-part, you know, thing that they came up with. Any last thoughts, Inge, before we wrap things up? We're at 2 minutes before the end.
Oh boy, no pressure.
Well,
you know, I was very skeptic at the beginning because of the bunny sled. That really put me off. But if I see the new footage and how they were treating everything in a video, mm-hmm. I get a little bit more confident that they may not screw it up as bad as I thought they would.
Okay, well, that's kind of a reserved reaction. But I think that I want to address that whole PETA thing about the animal mistreatment. You know, there's such a good vibe around this movie that I almost feel like this is the way the media works. They're just looking for a negative story. And so there are these rumors about, you know, animal mistreatment. I think that Peter Jackson and his crew had a very good, serious reply to this. They don't downplay it. They're not spinning it. I really genuinely feel that they're, you know, honest about, you know, this is what happened. We had a situation, but this is exactly what happened. And, you know, we are so dedicated to this movie and to the people and to the animals, you know.
If a horse dies of a colic, that's not animal abuse. That happens.
Dogs
eating chickens.
I mean, and I was reading about how far they went to. There was an interview with like the vets that are part of the production, and if you read, there was this chicken, and the chicken broke a leg, and the chicken was in the hospital for 6 months. Or so. I was like, come on, it's just a chicken. Anyway, I think it's just this politically correct world in which we live, where apparently we don't really care about all the violence around us, but oh boy, God forbid that the chicken might get, you know, lose some feathers during the shooting of a film. Anyway, well, it'll blow over when the movie is out. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon here on The Secrets of The Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.